Mini episode 94 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by TV Howl, your home on the web for coverage of today's television scene and a look at the history of the medium as covered by big-time TV critic Adam Buckman. Follow them on the web at tvhowl.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, folks, we are back with part four of the nine-part Kyle Ross History of WrestleMania anthology here in the FDH Lounge.
Rick God Morris, help us all.
Yeah. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross breaking it down here for you. We got through WrestleMania 5 last time around. That was part three. Part four that we're doing today is WrestleManias 6 through 8. So we're staying bunched up on the early end, Kyle.
Yes, but we're covering a little bit more ground. It's funny, I heard some of the feedback you got is, wow, I can't. You guys spent all this time on the first five WrestleManias. Like, my God, like, what's the rest of this going to be? Are you guys going to really speed through the ones closer?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is kind of yes. I think, like, for, you know, from 20, you know, the way we broke this down and people see as they kind of listen to these one by one, you know, I think from we're hitting 23 on in one podcast because, and you'll see why, that there's actually a built-in topic to why we're doing that.
Right.
But to me, these early WrestleManias, and we'll talk about that here with 6 through 8, they have more of a singular identity to them than the newer ones. The newer ones, it's WrestleMania. You know, let's see. It's kind of like, oh, John Cena wrestled somebody. Yeah, a large portion of the crowd booed him, you know.
Yep.
And you can get that at multiple ones. Here, each WrestleMania, at least the early ones, I think, and granted, I grew up in this era, as did you, so maybe that's a little biased. They had their own unique identity. I remember a lot more. There's things that stand out, angles, matches, good or bad,
right,
that you remember. The main events certainly take no time to recall.
Right.
So that's why we're doing it that way.
Today is
and plus,
more
who wants to hear about something that just – at least that's my perspective. I could be way wrong on this. I don't want to really hear about something in a when you're – embarking on a project like this that just happened. Everyone knows, you know.
Right. I would agree with that. And the ones today, I mean, by and large, it's, and as we talked about, it's harder for them to miss. It's paint by numbers, but in many cases, it's, if not a paint by numbers Mona Lisa, it's a paint by numbers pretty good picture these days. Some years they screw it up. Last year was kind of unsensational with 27, but like 24, the Ric Flair retirement card.
That was a very good one.
That was a very good one.
Here's the thing, and this
is formula that they have for filling this thing out, really.
It's indicative of the era that we're in, that they have a formula that prevents them from dropping to a level that, say, you know, of the mid-90s. You know, some of the WrestleManias we're going to get to a little later on.
They have a net that's built in.
Yeah, you know, it will never be as bad as, like, a 93 or a 95 or that time period.
Right.
But at the same time, I think there are also some of these built-in mechanisms prevent them from reaching the heights of, say, a WrestleMania 3 or a WrestleMania 17, which we'll get to.
It could be, yeah. I tend to agree with that for the most part.
The average WrestleMania now is better than the average WrestleMania then. We talked about of the first five WrestleManias, I rated four of them as below average.
Right.
With three being the obvious exception. And, you know, we're going to hit these now, and you know, most of these ones are in the average to below average range as well. I mean, the average WrestleMania now is great, but the last great WrestleMania, I don't know. That's a different subject for a different day.
Well,
I just wanted to hit on that.
No. I understand that, and I agree with what you're saying. And I think it's a thing also, we talked about it previously, that the early ones, and we're starting to move away from that with this mini episode today, a strong nostalgia value. The first five anyways, you get the six, and then from there on in, yeah, it starts to fade a little bit.
WrestleMania wasn't really a brand at that point. It was a novelty. It was like, oh, wow. Like, I remember, like, WrestleMania 5. I can't believe this is the fifth one, you know? I mean, that was kind of like now. It's like, you know, people don't even keep track of the numbers, you know? Well, they do, obviously, but.
And because they didn't have a formula back then, they would put together obviously the one match, maybe beyond that, two to three matches that they thought were really going to try and gather interest, and then fill out the card from there. It was sort of more like the proverbial box of chocolates here, and not the kind that's got the roadmap in it, but you know, some years it would be really good. Some years, like six here that we're looking at today, not so much. I mean,
there wasn't a lot going.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't. I mean, there were some things with nostalgia value.
Yeah, keep in mind, though, that the goal, though, back then, and it really is today, is what it should matter. And when we talk about the modern-day WrestleManias, we'll hit on this even in greater detail. Mm-hmm. It is that one match is the selling point. Really, except for people like you and me and probably people that listen to podcasts like this,
right?
The undercard is largely not of it. When a WrestleMania draws big,
mm-hmm.
it's never because of the undercard.
Ever. Right.
Really, anytime a show draws, it's never based on the undercard.
But
it's,
if we're going to rate something really strong, I mean, one of the reasons that 17 is so strong, it's not just because of the main event. It's because you sat there the whole time.
And it was, yes.
And there really wasn't
there was no
a
dead
bad
spot.
Moment.
Yeah, there was no dead. And they try to, there is a focus now where there's not throwaway stuff.
Right.
You know, we're going to really hit on that in these next two WrestleManias. And
right.
We started to talk about it with 4 and 5, where it just, they have all these matches, and there were no programs behind them, and they were short, and they just reeked of, hey, let's get two guys a payday.
Oh, exactly.
Whereas now they just put them on as lumberjacks in some
yeah.
match. You know?
And that's what they did.
All.
That's what they did
they
on
do the free-for-all
on
six. What is that called?
I don't know what it is now, but I know what you're talking about. They do still have, like,
it was whatever the Daniel Bryan Sheamus thing was.
Well, that was
year.
A dark match, I believe. Yes. Well, DVD exclusive, I believe that's how they do
pardon
it.
Pardon me. Yes.
Yes, I believe that's
in
what they
in my days, we got to see.
It.
In my days, yeah. We put on Channel 39 and watched the Smoking Guns versus the Body Donnas, okay?
I got to tell you, too, and I don't think I touched on this on any of these ones, there are very few actual pay-per-views that I saw back in the day, but here's what I did. I could always get the Scramble Channel, where you could make out a little bit of what
Channel
was going
99.
On, and get the commentary, so that they're basically glorified radio. When I caught a lot of these pay-per-views the first time around, that's what it was, essentially.
And you could always go and get the, like, I don't know about, well, I mean, you know, we grew up relatively in the same area. There was a lot, mm-hmm. remember the old video store, which
yes.
is now a thing of the past.
Yes.
You could always get the tape. I remember, and it's funny, because maybe this is a smooth transition that you were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a waiting list
yeah.
for WrestleMania 6. And I was one of the first people on at Old Falls Video on Bagley Road. And I was so psyched that, like, I remember I went in there before it was released and was like, hey, when this comes out, I want it. And they're like, oh, you're, like, third already.
Wow.
So.
Well, and that's.
Talk about something that don't happen today.
Yeah. Well, that was a show. And you talk about all the matches on this one and the way that it was formatted. 14 matches. But I think essentially almost a one-match show in terms of the way that it's regarded.
Yeah.
I mean, the other three were just, or 13, rather, were just throwaway ones.
No one talks about anything, and it's a big deal for me, kind of macro for this
right.
podcast that we'll hit to. No one talks about the other 13 matches.
No, they don't. They really
no
don't.
No staying power.
There's a couple of matches on here that are worth talking about. There's a couple of moments that are remembered from this thing, certainly.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of talk about this.
Yeah.
One thing that we should point out about this show is this WrestleMania 6 in the Sky Dome, headlined by Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior,
yeah.
which just kind of set the stage here. I think is one of the more fondly remembered of the early WrestleManias. You have to remember, the Sky Dome was a really cool thing in 19. I was thinking about this right before we went on. The Sky Dome was a real novelty. Remember, it's like, whoa, the roof can open. Like, how do you do that? You know,
right.
It was really new still, the Sky Dome. Toronto's always been a great city for the company. But when you take your two top baby faces, obviously, they're both champions. You know, back then, you know, a title match was a big deal. I'm
it
like,
was.
Now, okay,
yeah.
Jack Swagger, Santino Marella, okay, and a Monday Night Special with a bunch of idiots running around in the background.
Right.
Okay? That doesn't leave a lot on the undercard, so that's the first thing that hurt it. But this is a fondly remembered WrestleMania, and I think, whereas 7, which we'll also be talking about here, I kind of want to go macro before we go individual here. 7, because the event was moved to the less prestigious LA Sports Arena. It was supposed to be in the Memorial Coliseum because of the Sergeant Slaughter angle. That
right.
one is kind of like, yeah, you know, 7, that was kind of a dud. And the main event is obviously nowhere near as appealing as Hogan Warrior was.
Well, like 6, the undercard sucked too. It wasn't like the undercard could save
yeah,
it.
But
although the semi-main was great.
Yeah, but with 7, I think that's a better show than people remember it for, while Six is worse.
You're probably right in terms of the way that we inflated in our minds, but there were a couple, maybe it accounts for the fact that there were a couple of guys that were on Six that were not on Seven. Like, for example, like I don't believe Roddy Piper was on Seven, was he?
Yeah, but he wasn't. No,
he was in
Virgil's corner. He was in Virgil's corner.
All right,
and this was Andre's swan song.
So Piper and Andre were on Six, they weren't on Seven. That might account for it a little bit.
You had some big names, but largely
Dusty was on Six.
Yeah, but God, was that bad?
Well,
and that's a big sticking point to me with Six. I mean, if you want to get into some of these individual matches, first of all, Hogan Warrior.
Yeah.
I've been criticized for years, you know, when I've had a microphone in my hand and sitting next to you or sitting next to whoever talking about
mustache.
This. Of hating Hulk Hogan. This, to me, was one of the last times he ever tried in a match. I thought this match is good. Like, as much as I dog all the other ones.
Right.
This was his best WrestleMania match. And he gave a lot of effort. And when you have two workers that limited, it's pretty scary. I mean, they practiced this match. They called them to Stamford, and they practiced it. And it's very good. I would call it a fringe top 20 WrestleMania match all time.
Yeah, it was very good. Part of it was, too, it's interesting. You can never separate, in the case of Hulk Hogan, the politics from anything else. Hulk Hogan had something to prove in this match here. He was being replaced on top by the Ultimate Warrior. He wanted to go out there and give the performance of a lifetime. And again, typical Hulk Hogan, finding a way, even while ostensibly putting the other guy over, to be selfish. Going back in the ring, stealing his heat, putting the belt on him, and the wave
like
the crowd
that.
Afterwards.
I didn't think that was stealing heat necessarily, but I will
he admits now that it was. If you watch the DVDs, Hogan admits he was stealing his heat.
I will say this. He carried the match.
He did.
He carried the match. The babyface v. babyface thing on top was very unique.
Right.
I mean, that did not happen. And the crowd reactions were split. They weren't really booing either guy.
Right.
People were definitely cheering the one they wanted. I was a Warrior guy going. I remember, I think this was my first vestiges of being a smart mark. I remember my dad being like, oh, who do you think's going to win? I'm like, I want the Ultimate Warrior, but, stupid old Hogan will probably win like he always does, And you're right, though. The fact that he was going to lose and the plan, I guess, was to replace him on top. I have major issues with that, by the
right.
way. And I'll get into that in a second. Maybe let him to try a little harder than he normally does.
Mm-hmm.
They went longer than he usually does. I mean, this was like a 20-something minute match. So
yeah.
That's worth pointing out. But as far as him, stealing the heat or whatever, there was a lot of focus. Remember, this is when they busted out the immortal line. Hulkamania will live forever. Hulk Hogan is now immortal. That's the first time they busted out the immortal Hulk Hogan line was after this match.
When he first came in 1984, he was the immortal Hulk
was
Hogan,
he?
But it was,
are
I
you
believe
sure that
wasn't
so. The incredible
Hulk? Oh, maybe it was incredible.
Yeah, they
okay.
call him incredible because I specifically being like, oh, God.
Kurt Angle would chastise me for getting my eyes wrong.
Yes,
okay.
yes. But here's the thing. I thought, and here's the thing. Obviously, everyone talks about kind of the legacy of this is, all right, they tried going from Hogan to Warrior, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The Warrior was a flop as the champion. Now, I've always contended they did the Warrior no favors after the show.
Right.
Hogan, he went away, but he went away with a big injury angle against the Earthquake that became the focus of the promotion, while the Ultimate Warrior was given a very lame challenger in Rick Rude, who he'd feuded with for 89. He'd already beaten decisively in a blow-off match. No one bought Rick Rude as a legitimate world title contender at that time.
He was a great worker who could carry him, and he needed
even,
to be
He wasn't
carried.
Even a great worker at that point. Rick Rude...
He was above average.
People always say, oh, he carried the Warrior. To me, he didn't really get good until WCW, until he was working with Ricky Steamboat.
Well, that was his peak. That was his absolute peak.
But to me, the match they have at SummerSlam in the cage is terrible.
But yeah, you're right that he didn't have the credibility.
Bad.
He did not have the credibility to be in there.
And they wrestled like on a Saturday night's main event, the Warrior beat. I mean, whatever. We're getting too far off
right.
the beaten path with that. But it's a 4-star match, Hogan Warrior.
Yeah.
I truly believe it's a 4-star match. And, the build was great. They didn't have a lot. It's funny why they went to that, though. We should talk, because we've always talked about the setups for some of these. During this period, and in 91 this holds case too, the product got real stale. After WrestleMania 5, the product got real... The big program of 89 was Hogan Zeus. And remember, there were rumors at the time that that was going to headline WrestleMania 6.
Oh, yeah.
And that would, of course, have been the biggest disaster of all time. It would have been the wrestling equivalent of the Hindenburg, for crying out loud, right?
Right.
So, you know, the Warrior was getting really popular. So they did the that moment in the Rumble when they eliminate everyone, they turn around. Mm-hmm. And that's a great Rumble moment.
It is.
You know, that's something that's going to be hard to duplicate because of the star power involved. But other than that match, which deserves a lot of kudos, mm-hmm. and it's funny, again, we talk about WrestleMania 1, it speaks volumes when Hulk Hogan and Mr. T are the babyface team in your best match of the night.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes when these two save the show, because I just watched this in preparation
mm-hmm.
for doing this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing that holds my interest before that match. I mean, it's either wasting people, disappointments, or squash-o-rama.
Yeah, and there's a couple points on the card that I want to talk about, but it's funny that in terms of this match, and I'm amused that with your foreshadowing about Hulk Hogan winning, that despite you being some years younger than me, this was the 11th hour, I'd say, of my markdom. You were already less of a mark than I was, but as a mark, even I knew kind of like it was what I did. I don't think I didn't know to use the word booking, but a thing of what happens the day after this match. And that's what made it so fascinating to me, is that this you couldn't fathom it. You didn't get good guy versus good guy, much less superhero good guy versus superhero good guy.
And these were by far and away the top two guys of the promotion.
It went so far against the grain. By the way, and this was something I was thinking about also, what a coincidence that in both cases, two of the cases in my life where I thought, oh my God, but what happens the day after the match? It was Hulk Hogan and both of the Blade Runners, because I thought the same thing about him and Sting years later. Where do they go after that? At that point, I knew it was called booking. But I was like, what happens after that
match? Oh, you're talking about
match?
WCW and Starrcade?
Yes, at Starrcade 97.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what should have happened. Okay, they should have beat them clean, and the NWO should have broke up. But instead, that company's out of business, and that's a different podcast for a different day.
Exactly.
Continue, please.
Exactly. Okay. But it's just a coincidence that it's both of the Blade Runners with Hogan, where I had that sensation of, wow, this is the biggest thing that you can imagine, but I can't imagine where they go from here.
It's interesting you bring that up, because what was going on? Let's talk.
The other Blade Runner was top. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what was going on the other channel in 1990.
Yeah.
WCW got a raw deal, because if you remember with your timeline, as you know, Sting was going to get the NWA World Title from Ric Flair on this, and they were going to do their passing the torch. They got hosed. I remember as a kid, I thought they were kind of copying, because I didn't really understand. Again, like you know, mm-hmm. the booking time and what happened. Sting was scheduled to get the title. They wanted to do like an ushering in the 90s thing.
Right.
Was going to get the title at Wrestle War 90.
Right.
Which was going to be in February. I think that's critical. I think he got really hurt by this. He legitimately did get hurt, and that's why that had to be changed. They did a couple pay-per-views with Lex Luger, the usual atrociously booked finishes.
Right.
He doesn't get it till July after the Ultimate Warrior. Didn't that kind of come across subconsciously? Mm-hmm. I bet you a lot of people is, oh, they're copying. Oh, because Ultimate Warrior and Sting, even if you didn't know they were a tag team in the territories, it's like, okay, it's the muscular, face-painted guy.
Young guys,
yeah,
too. Yeah.
And
next generation.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow, it really looks like they're copying now.
You're right.
It's out of their control. I wonder what if that would have helped the NWA had the plan. Well, it certainly would have, but how much it would have helped had Sting gotten the title originally scheduled at WrestleWar.
I think that's a real good point. And I think with Warrior getting the title here, it allowed the WWF to get the jump on him.
Just like Sting, by the way,
mm-hmm.
which also did not work, interestingly enough. His title reign was terrible. I don't want to hear anybody say that this was the... That's hindsight being 2020 guy.
Mm-hmm.
Putting the title on the Warrior here is the absolute 100% right decision.
If you're going to make the match, it's the only outcome you can go with, because whether or not you knew it
they
was time.
They also had to do something else.
Yeah.
Hogan was getting stale on it. The Zeus thing, you know, the Randy's. Look at 89. I mean, he feuded with Mr. Perfect. You know, he didn't really give him anything, you know. But he changed the finish to the Rumble, I'm sure, as you know.
Yeah.
Perfect originally supposed to go over. Mm-hmm. Hogan even looked, because, well, I didn't win it last year. I mean, heaven forbid we do something 2 years in a row and I don't win it once.
Right.
Know? So, it was the absolute. I don't want to hear anyone say. I mean, granted, it didn't work out.
Right.
Should they have maybe done a rematch at WrestleMania 7 where Hogan gets his win back? I don't know, because Vince McMahon would then be kind of admitting failure, which he doesn't do.
Right.
So they did what they did. We'll get into that. But it was they had to try something new. They didn't do him any favors. And look, he's not the he being the Warrior, not the performer that can carry a promotion that Hulk Hogan was in his heyday.
Right.
But it was the right move. It was the right try. And again, I keep saying this, it was the only thing that, A, mattered on this show, and the only thing that is worth remembering on this show.
Absolutely. And before we get to any of the undercard, I just want to underline what you said there, because we have to think back to the WWF of that era and I'll grant you, everybody in the promotion, in this sense, it's sort of like major division college football versus lower division college football. If we use that analogy, everybody was larger than life relative to, say, a schlub wrestling on TV for the AWA at the time. But you then had another tier altogether of these guys in a larger-than-life promotion are larger-than-life yet. Hogan, Warrior, Savage. It wasn't going to go back on Savage. I mean, if we're taking, say, the FantasyDraftHelp.com approach with the draft board here, where you have tiers of whatever, we can talk all day long, as we did in previous ones. Oh, Jake Roberts was like maybe like the next guy after Hogan and Savage at a certain point, but you draw a big line.
Yeah, it's a
in
big,
there.
Yeah, it's a big drop.
Jake Roberts couldn't have been elevated to this point.
It's like when you're talking about NBA champions. You know,
right.
Somebody, you know, you've got the Heat, the Bulls, and the Thunder. Everyone thinks it's going to be one of those three.
Yeah.
Well, could it be the Clippers, the Spurs? Maybe, but they're a huge drop below.
Right.
That'd be far more surprising.
That's exactly it. I mean, out of all the guys on the undercard, the only guy that you could have made a case for maybe was Roddy Piper.
He was a part-timer, though.
Yeah,
after this, he didn't do anything.
He
went back to commentary.
Well, he didn't mean as much in 1990 as he did previously. That's part of it,
no.
too. He was hotter as a heel.
He was almost a special attraction.
He was
a special attraction at this point.
He was. And we talk about the special attractions, and I'll get to that in a moment, but I want to get to something here. When I looked at this card, when I looked at the booking, that you could see it a little bit even then of Vince, not as much as you would see in the years subsequently, but Vince with the Vengeance booking, because I'm looking at a match here.
Uh-oh.
That Dusty Rhodes Sapphire versus Randy Savage and Queen Sherry one. Now, granted, Dusty and Sapphire went over.
This was like the number two match on the card, by the way.
It is interesting, by the way, that for as much as Dusty had the polka dots and all of that, he was, until his dying days there,
he was really
when
over.
He was buried by 9 seconds every night by Virgil. Until then, he was upper mid card the whole way. You got to give Vince credit for that. But here's the thing, though, and I know
you have to give him credit. I think a lot of that falls on the performer. He was really popular.
He was.
I mean, Grant, you're right. Vince could have. I mean, today's Vince probably makes him start at the bottom and he's losing every match.
Right.
But you have to give a lot of credit to the performer. Yeah, he dressed him in the stupid polka dots. Yeah, he gave him Sapphire, who was, of course, one of the most horrendous things ever. But, it's interesting, though. We have to give him credit. This, first of all, I'm sorry, this match is terrible.
Yeah, it was.
I wanted to say that. Just,
it was. It was. But
I'm interested to hear your point here.
Well, here's my point on this. And I understand that the program had been underway for a while. But that's a thing where that's in Vince's hands. He could have started the program a little later. My point is, you back up 2 years, 3 years, whatever, to kids like us with the aftermags. Dusty Rhodes versus Randy Savage? Are you kidding me? Where can I see this dream match?
Yeah.
By the time he gets to WrestleMania 6, they're in a throwaway mixed tag match that nobody gives two craps.
Well,
about.
No. See, I just see
horrible booking.
See, I disagree. This was the number two featured match on the show.
But it would have meant more if it was Dusty Rhodes versus Randy Savage dream match. Much more.
You're right.
I'm not being smart, Mark, by saying that.
Okay, you're right. The inclusion of the women here
watered it down.
Was bad.
Put them in the corners and leave it at that. Call it a day.
Look, here's the problem with this. Okay, and this speaks volumes about WrestleMania in general. Randy Savage was wasted in this match.
Right.
I think is what we're both kind of you just said and what I'm about
so
to say.
Well, so was Dusty. Dusty could have been used
but Savage more so. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Well, because he has a bigger body of work at WrestleMania. Dusty,
right.
I mean, this was his only WrestleMania, so I can't go off it.
Right.
Savage, I could argue, was the MVP, co-MVP, most important, in the most important, best match, whatever you want to say, at WrestleMania 3, certainly, against Steamboat. He's in the best match that night.
Right.
Okay? Obviously not the main event, but it was the best match that everyone agrees. 4, he is obviously the main attraction there, winning 4 matches in the night to become champion.
Right.
5, he goes in as the defending champion against Hulk Hogan in the main event.
Right.
And then fast forward a year from this, he has that tremendous match against the Ultimate, carries the Ultimate Warrior to the match, the Ultimate Warrior's life, which we're going to spend a lot of time in.
Sure.
WrestleMania 8, he's in a world title match against Ric Flair, another great match. Then you have this one kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Total waste. Very indicative of how bad this undercard is. This was a total waste of Randy Savage. You're right. Dusty Rhodes versus Randy Savage would have meant something.
Yeah.
Polka dots or no polka dots, the inclusion of the women, and this was just a backdrop to get Elizabeth involved too, if
right.
you remember. She comes back after the year off. She, you know, gets physical by shoving Sherry.
Right.
This was just bad. Well, this is it's Sapphire. God bless her soul.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing. I mean, this is just like, the only thing that saved this was Jesse Ventura's disgust on commentary. It seemed like he really was not enjoying this when he started yelling that sucked after the match was over.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I can believe that.
This was a throwaway.
It was. But that, I mean, and
but it was the number. It should show you where the undercard was here. This was the number two. This match was announced early,
right.
for the card, and certainly because remember it was hyped as the first ever mixed tag.
Yeah,
and it received next to Hogan Warrior, and again, it's a substantial drop.
Mm-hmm.
The second most attention of any match on this card.
Fittingly, for a Dusty Rhodes match. For Randy Savage, this was the splotch on his WrestleMania career. I think we can all agree on that.
It's just a throw. You just watch it. It's like, okay, if you're being lighthearted, oh, okay, that's kind of funny. Sapphire comes in and starts, you know, shaking a rump and
right,
scary stuff. But
right.
it's just, I can't get over it, a waste of Randy Savage.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda meant more, because with Dusty, it was not implied as heavily as it was when Ric Flair would get there, but you still had... Most people grasped interpromotional dream match. Most people weren't blind to the fact that there was another national promotion
and Dusty was pushed pretty. I mean, Big Boss Man in 1989 was coming off a feud with Hogan. I mean, that was Dusty's first big feud before Savage. I mean, that was a big deal. I mean, you know, a feud of the Boss, and he came out booked strong. I mean, he beat the Boss Man on almost every turn. So, you know, he was booked strong. You know, that was important what you brought up. Dusty Rhodes was not being mocked or buried at this point at all. I mean, he wins the second. I mean, he's involved.
Right.
You know, he goes over in the second most important match on the card, but it's not a good match.
He initially started. His first run was with Honky, and he dispatched to him pretty quickly.
That wasn't
too.
Really a run. That was just kind of a throwaway they did at SummerSlam. If I remember, he already had the nightstick.
Yeah,
I think so. He was really new, and they just and Honky was definitely on the job squad in '89.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And he beats him pretty solidly at that SummerSlam, but he survives his Survivor Series. Dusty Rhodes. Yeah, he. It was after this that. It kind of began the slow descent, you know, to him, you know, being kicked out of there in early 91.
It did. The other matches here, that the only ones that really meant anything at all, we touched on it briefly before, the two special attractions, Roddy Piper and Andre the Giant. We'll take Roddy first. This is remembered for being some of the worst taste, I think, in the history. I mean... Vince was on a real roll. This was the Saba Simba era, and Roddy Piper coming
out
and painting
Tony
himself.
Atlas.
Yeah.
Tony Atlas.
Painting himself half black. I love the story on the DVD, though, where he recounts about how they substituted, like, real paint and, like...
Andre and Fuji.
Yeah, emptied out with a cleaner and put water in there. So he was having to go through the Toronto airport afterwards with that.
You know, yeah, you're right. One word can summarize it. By the way, he wrestles Bad News Brown.
Bad News Brown,
okay.
Yeah.
One word summarizes this. Disappointment, again.
Yeah, Bad News was over. This could have meant something.
Well, he was kind of...
Well, he was fading by then.
Yeah,
he was fading.
But here's
89
the thing.
Was his year. 88, 89.
It's funny. You know, you see him... you're right. This match is obviously, remember, for Roddy coming out with his body painted half black.
Right.
And, you know, you think to yourself, who came up with this idea? I'll tell you who it wasn't. It was Bad News Brown, because he was reportedly not happy about it.
I heard the shoot interview.
Yeah,
he went off on him.
He was not... He took offense to it, and... You know, whether or not that's right, that's his cross to bear.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether he's offended by it, I mean, you can't say you can't be offended by that. I mean, you know,
I perfectly understand why he would.
Yeah.
Be. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when he like the black half was doing like a Michael Jackson dance.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: when you think Piper Bad News, this again, huge colossal disappointment. You think wild brawl,
right.
And again, it's 1990 WWF, so you're not going to get like blood and them sticking spikes in each other's eyes.
That would have been awesome.
You certainly expect, yeah. I mean, even the announcers were kind of hyping, oh, this is going to be real wild, rock'em sock'em kind of match. It was just awful.
But there was no such thing as hardcore back in the day.
Yeah, but there was
any kind of weapons shot.
There was a certain level that you expected from these guys, and it did. I mean, Piper basically admitted, he's like, all the match sucked. And I can't disagree with it. It was first of all, a gutless double D countout
right.
to go to. I mean, that doesn't help anybody's case. I mean, you know, Piper was – you're not going to beat Piper, obviously.
Right.
But bad news was kind of – he was also – I mean, he was almost done. I mean, he wrapped up by the end of the year. This, again, here's the problem with the WrestleMania 6 undercard. Most, if not everything, falls into one of two categories. Just a squash-a-rama that, I mean, just had no intrigue. You knew who was going to go over, and it's like, pin me, pay me. Or the hyped matches, all I think could be categorized as disappointments. The mixed tag was Oasis Savage, and this was just a bad match.
It was.
The program was okay. It started the Royal Rumble, remember?
Yeah.
And, you know, Bad News did the typical insulting, oh, you know, you're wearing a skirt and stuff
right.
like that. I mean, it had some heat going in. It wasn't like they just put these two against each other. It's not like a Duggan Bad News Brown from the previous WrestleMania
right.
where there was no program whatsoever. You just thought, oh, okay, this could be a good brawl. There was a program behind this, and it just the whole paint himself half black thing killed this thing dead before it even started.
But here's the thing, though, and this was always the case with Piper. It was always a tale of both halves of what it takes to go into a pro wrestling match. You could put Piper with a lot of guys where it's a great promo battle and everything like that. But Roddy Piper, not being a great worker in the classical sense, had to have a guy with him where he wasn't going to have a styles clash. Witness, 4 years later, one of the worst ones ever, him and Jerry the King Lawler, King of the Ring 94, where those guys couldn't have meshed any worse.
Now,
Piper needed to be in there with somebody that was complimentary of his style.
And keep that in mind, wrestling fans, for later in this podcast,
yeah.
because Roddy Piper, his best match ever in WWE, we're
yes.
going to talk about that.
Yes.
Which is a couple years later, WrestleMania, which had a great verbal battle behind it, and then they performed in the ring.
And a guy who could carry him as far as the work rate stuff went and cover for him and everything else like that.
I don't think these two got along. That's always when
that's
two
it
guys,
too, yeah.
And when you come out half black, look, I don't think Bad News was exactly looking to sell and make Piper look
no,
good,
no,
know?
He wasn't.
He sold. I mean, just it is, again, terrible.
He certainly wasn't. The other big special attraction and the only other match that really meant anything whatsoever, the last hurrah of Andre the Giant, the Colossal Connection, he and Haku defending the belts and dropping them subsequently to Demolition. I believe it was their last go-around as tag team champions.
They
captured
the
belts
shortly after.
Yeah,
at
9:30.
And added Crush.
Yeah, and added Crush. So it was sort of a slow-motion double turn because they would turn heel subsequently. Andre the Giant turns face immediately after the match when Heenan turned on him, gets to go out as a face.
Yeah, to me, the match is not great at all.
No.
Andre, by the way, doesn't even work. He just does a couple token things like that. He was in awful shape. I mean, we talked
right.
about, I mean, how what bad shape he was in four. I mean,
well, he was dead less than 2 years later.
Yeah, I mean,
so.
he should not have been working
no.
here. But, you know, whatever happened. This, I mean, the match is not good, but this to me is actually my highlight of the undercard, which is, I mean, again, speaks volumes about the undercard, Ricky. I was a huge Demolition mark back in the day, and it was really cool. You know, this was their third win. They had, you know, we talked about it, in great deal in the last podcast. What a mark it is to them, their favor, that during the height of tag team wrestling in this company, when they had as much depth in the division as probably ever, they held the title from WrestleMania to WrestleMania 4-5. After that, they drop it to the Brain Boss. Arn and Tully come in, win it, lose it back real quick because they were going to fire. They got rid of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Colossal Connection kind of just picked up. I don't know if it was a token. I've never understood the point of the Colossal Connection. I guess maybe it was a token title for Andre. I think that's what it was. They want, maybe this was some sort of long-term planning. Hey, we're going to get rid of the Brain Busters. We just want Demolition to win the belts back at WrestleMania 6 from somebody. So
right.
But you're right. Obviously, the main thing, and this is kind of the last hurrah for Demolition, because you're right, they turned heel. And the match against the Hart Foundation at SummerSlam that year is very good. I really recommend people watch that. But the story here, you're right, it's Andre kind of turning. Heenan blames him for the loss because he doesn't get in, you know.
Right.
And he slaps him. You know, Andre misses the slap back pretty badly. That's bad. And, you know, he beats up Haku and he rides out to the cheers. And that was kind of cool they did that for Andre, I thought. You know, that to me, that was the best moment of the undercard. I mean, the rest of it, I mean, you can go through. I mean, I can hit him right. Want to get scared? I can hit him right now without looking. Martel Coco. That was kind of a random repush of Martel as the model.
Right.
You know, he had been heel for a while. They kind of treated it like he was like a newly fresh heel in the company.
This Rick Martel, a youngster from Canada, I'm told.
No, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they kind of like, you know, he had been heel for, and again, no program, opening match.
Right.
Does anyone really think Coco Beware is going to win? No. Earthquake squashes Hercules again. I was
2 years before Hercules would win PWI Rookie of the Year.
I knew you're going
to
do it.
That was a setup, yes, though. Yes. Well, not only a setup for me to say that, but that was part of the Earthquake mega push yet to come. Hercules was basically jobber to the stars at that point.
Well, and then that's cemented it says. There is one match coming up next that did receive it did have a program behind it. It was Beefcake Perfect.
Yeah.
If you remember Perfect, obviously it feuded with Hogan at the end of 89. You know, Beefcake, obviously, you know, the lead ass kisser in the Hogan ass kissing club. You know, kind of dropped it. Gee, I wonder who influenced the booking here to get Mr. Perfect
right.
his first pinfall loss on TV. Thank God Perfect wins the Intercontinental title shortly thereafter.
And I know
the
that...
match is not bad. From a wrestling perspective, this is probably the second best match on the card. And the crowd does pop big, but it's like, and again, you're like, well, where were they going with this? You know, why would they do that? They were going to build to a rematch at SummerSlam for the Intercontinental title, but Beefcake, you know, had the parasailing accident, so they never got to do it.
Well,
just so in case if anyone was wondering.
Look, and I don't want to say anything bad about anybody that was on the show, as Beefcake was, and I appreciate Mr. Beefcake was nice enough to do that, but...
Your show, if, this is.
Our show, yeah.
On the FDH
he was on the FDH
Lounge.
Yeah, okay. But here's the thing.
We'll certainly rip anyone who was on WrestleMania 6 freely.
Yeah.
Okay.
But look, if you hooked him up to a lie detector test about whether he was worthy of getting that first pinfall on Mr. Perfect and told him he'd get a shock stick to the nards if he lied, I think he would have to say, yeah, I had no business going over on him, okay?
I always thought that Perfect, they did a main event, which, by the way, the ratings were way down from the first two when they did, you know, the Andre title win in 88.
That was
the
where
Savage
Tyson heel. Taking the dive in Tokyo.
Yeah,
hurt.
That was hurt by a lot of things. And then, you know, the Savage heel turn in 89. You're right. Their big draw was going to be Mike Tyson was going to be the referee for Hogan Savage again. Why not do Hogan Perfect and blow that? I guess maybe they didn't want to beat Perfect for the first time there going into WrestleMania.
That was like the blow-off after 9 months, the final blow-off of Hogan Savage, essentially. I think they thought there was still juice in the rind.
I guess.
Teamed up with Zeus on both pay-per-views. I mean, they'd beaten the Savage thing to death.
It just seemed like that. You know, they weren't really – Hogan was feuding them. Whatever.
Complete foregone conclusion. Hart Foundation, Bolsheviks,
Blink
19-second match.
Yeah. I mean, again, the Harts were being groomed to be the next tag team. The big story was they challenged the winner of the tag title match. So they just put him over.
The funny thing is, Boris Zukov in this match, I asked Bret Hart about him the first time he was on our show, because when I was playing devil's advocate about Montreal, I said Boris Zukov left the AWA with the world tag team titles, and that was one of the big nails in the coffin. Yeah, I said... I get the whole thing and that Vince was incompetent to have the belt on you going into Montreal knowing you were leaving, but you couldn't really leave Montreal with a belt looking at the Boris Zukov example, and then he disagreed with me, but we had a civil discussion about it. This, by the way, this was not long before he went back to the WWE after denying that was in the works. I should have known.
Sneaky point guard, yes.
I should have known at the time. When we had a civil discussion about Montreal, I should have realized that he had put more of that to rest. And I thought,
and by the way, we just spent more time talking about Hart Foundation Bolsheviks than anyone in the history of the world.
Yes, I think we did. The Barbarian defeated Tito Santana. The Barbarian won of, I sent you a link from the Pro Wrestling Only message board. There's a guy on there, I think it's still in Waco, that has like 75 guys who would have been better than Triple H had they gotten his push. The Barbarian is on that list.
That's a hipster take, first of all.
Barbarian was underutilized severely.
Just wasn't... And you watch this, he does a cool clothesline, beats Tito. He didn't have him, man. He was boring.
That foot to the head. His foot.
He was better than, I'll tell
his
you.
His foot to
you
the head greater than the knee to the head thing that Triple H
does.
Yeah,
but Jim Ross can't say shades of Harley Race. By the way, here's the nicest thing I will say about the Barbarian.
What?
He's better than the Warlord.
Yes, he is. He most certainly
who was
is.
Not on this show, by the way. But they had just broken up the – if anyone cares.
Right.
I love talking about because I can remember these angles, unlike the ones that happened last year that I can't remember. But they had just broken up the Powers of Pain because they were going nowhere.
Right.
And Fuji had sold them into – Heenan was kind of redoing the – because he lost Andre here. He was kind of redoing the Heenan family. You pick up Perfect, too, after this show. So
What could have been a great match had there been less other matches to take up time. 7 minutes, 38 seconds, the Orient Express defeated the Rockers by count out.
It also could have been better if the Rockers clearly were not fucked up.
Well,
pardon me.
That's
I'm sorry.
True.
I didn't mean to say that that way. Yeah. That just came out. If you need to beep that,
I do
there
not.
Is a long and told urban legend that
okay.
Sean and Marty had been out partying. You know,
okay.
So some say when Mr. Fuji threw salt in Marty Jannetty's face, they might rumor has that might have not have been the first time all weekend Marty Jannetty had white stuff in his face.
Oh.
Okay, all right. Let's just say that. Okay.
I thought you were going to say that with the other contents that were in his mouth at the time that completed the margarita.
Yes. You gotta wonder if maybe this was changed. I don't know. No, I've never heard anything. A countout win.
Yeah.
The Rockers, it's funny, Monsoon even mentions in the commentary,
right,
kayfabe, oh, the Rockers seem off tonight. It is a long-told story that they were hungover.
Well, yeah, you know, that was as they so often were back in the day. Jim Duggan defeated Dino Bravo.
Duggan trying to get a USA chant started in Canada against the Canadian Bravo. That's the highlight of this match.
Very nice. DiBiase with the million-dollar belt defeated Jake the Snake
Roberts. I can't believe we're not hitting this till then. Again.
Upper mid-card.
Well, you know what? This was probably the third feat, along with that mixed tag. This was heavily pushed. These guys had feuded for almost a year. Remember, DiBiase attacks Roberts at WrestleMania 5. Oh, man, how did we... And again, one word to describe this. Disappointment. It was so boring.
Yeah.
Jakeberts has a horrible string of WrestleMania matches.
That's,
I mean,
true.
He had the match against Rick Rude at WrestleMania 4, which is two guys just headlocking each other for 15 minutes.
Right.
The Andre match is atrocious at WrestleMania 5.
Right.
And then this, and then, you know, we'll get into the blindfold match next year, which
right.
isn't exactly, you know, reminiscent of Flair's Steamboat, okay? But, you know, again, look, what were the featured programs underneath Hogan Warrior? I don't mean to keep beating a drum, you know. I feel like, you know, I'm on the worldwide leader here, you know. For
you might as well be,
okay,
yeah.
Well, yeah, what a fine channel, too. Okay, but here's the thing. Jake DiBiase, mixed tag, Piper Brown, the matches that have angles going. Because
yeah.
there weren't a lot of things that we just hit there in the last 2 minutes that
right.
had programs. The matches that did have programs, all disappointments. This match is, the crowd does the wave during this match.
Yeah.
And the announcers, Gorilla and Jesse are poor asleep. Oh, yo, it's got to be WrestleMania. You know, God, can you imagine now?
Yeah.
Vince McMahon would probably run out and just start shooting the audience or start telling Michael Cole, say Bizarro World 20 times.
You know? He probably would. In the breakup that had the least heat since the Young Broncos breakup, the Twin Towers dissolved as the Big Boss Man defeated Akeem with Slick in 149.
Boss Man did get a mega push in 1990 as a babyface. You know, he got a real big push. I mean, he was in Hogan's corner at SummerSlam, replacing the very not over type, or pardon me, Tugboat Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Toot. Okay. Akeem gets buried here bad, because if you remember before this, DiBiase was hiding under the ring from the previous, and because there was a program, remember, if you were, maybe you don't, Jake had stolen the million-dollar title, which set up that match.
Right.
And DiBiase tried to, you know, pay Boss, he tried to pay off
Slick. That was
Slick
the impetus for the turn.
Yeah, he paid off Slick to get the to have the Boss Man do it, and the Boss Man, it made no sense. The Boss Man was like, what a payoff, you know, I would have done it, you know, for free, but now that you're giving me money, this is terrible, I'm turning babyface. So DiBiase beats the Boss Man up before the match, and they're basically like, oh man, the Boss Man, you got a raw deal here, and he like hits one move and it's over.
Yeah.
Hit the bricks, Akeem. Well, you know why? They had Dusty to make. They didn't need Akeem to make fun of Dusty Rhodes anymore. They had the real thing.
They did, and in another year or so, Akeem would be out of there and back to being the one-man gang in WCW at the time, too. Proof, by the way, if proof were still needed, that Big Bubba Rogers greater than the Big Boss Man. Big Boss Man sucked as a gimmick. The Boss, the Guardian Angel,
well,
whatever he was
like. The Big Boss, if you ask
Give me
people,
Big Bubba Rogers any day of the week.
Yeah,
I'm old school NWA,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, I know, but most people are going to say this was his height.
I hope that doesn't make me a hipster, but I prefer Big Bubba Rogers.
No, you're not. I'll let it slide.
All right, and then the only other one we didn't talk about, two legendary names, but a match that meant nothing because of where they were at their respective points in their career. Ravishing Rick Rude defeated Jimmy Superfly.
Well, Rude was going to get the big put. You know, he cut his hair.
Snuka,
yeah, at this point. He had been brought back in 89. It didn't work. The magic was gone. Steve Allen on commentary for this, a dismal job. Gorilla Monsoon, one of my favorite people who does these burials of people on commentary, crushed Steve Allen on this.
Yeah.
Listen to it. It's funny. By the way, I hate Rick Rude.
That was tremendous. I love Rick Rude. He was a great heel. But
we should explain why I hate Rick Rude in case people missed the last podcast.
Well, because, we talked about this, that supposedly, and then this has come out from a couple different people, I guess, including I've never heard it come out of Bobby Heenan's mouth, but I've heard other people say that Heenan said that Rick Rude hated him because he stole his heat, and that Heenan always felt like that, oh, he hates me because he thinks I'm stealing his heat. He thinks I'm drawing off his heat and everything like that. And Rude supposedly believed that himself. And while I don't believe that that was the case, I also don't believe he needed Heenan's help as much as a lot of the other heat magnets that...
No, he didn't. He didn't, but it helped him. Like great Arn Anderson once said, anyone managed by Bobby Heenan was better off for it.
Who needed... Oh, okay. Well, like in a couple different instances here, did he need Heenan's help to get over, say, more than Big John Studd?
No, but okay. it doesn't mean that he wasn't better. He wasn't more over because he was in the Heenan family.
It was probably
being
more
in the
over.
Heenan family was a big deal back
but
then.
But it's like, here's the thing, though. You can be in the Heenan family, and the rub gives you a certain benefit, so to speak. It doesn't mean that Heenan's got to go out there and do the same level of shtick with you.
He stood behind him and took his robe off.
Yeah, I mean, well.
He did what a manager's supposed to. That is a stupid take by the late Rick Rude.
Well, okay. The man's not here to defend himself. But
well, good, because I'd win the argument anyway. He doesn't have to waste his time losing an argument.
I don't think this conversation would go any differently if he were.
It actually will go
physically
much worse
here.
If it keeps going, I think. So next subject, please.
I think it would, yeah.
So but, Hogan Warrior, though, we really like. And
Hogan Warrior, yeah, the undercard was a disappointment. And the couple matches that were collectively kind of the semi-main with
all
the remnants of the big names.
All
disappointing.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. 6 WrestleManias in the books now, mm-hmm. Ricky, that we've talked about.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 6, I talked about how 3 and 17, you could put them up on their own pedestal. There's 25 others to rank. You could break them, I think, pretty cleanly into 5 groups of 5.
Mm-hmm.
WrestleMania 6 goes in this, not the bottom group of 5 that 1 and 2 went into that I mm-hmm. talked about, but it's in the next worst group that 4 and 5 are in. I think 4, so... Here's the thing. 6 WrestleManias in the book, I've got 5 rated as the worst in the bottom 10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as nostalgia as we have, got to be fair. Got to be objective.
They don't stand the test of time in terms of something you want to watch start to finish.
Yeah, unless if you remember the period. I think newer fans would be like, God, these matches are all so short and just, there's no good moves.
Right,
you know?
Right. But,
not all programmed.
You know, it then comes to, with Warrior and Hogan, the...
Yeah, I think it's important that we set the stage. We don't go to 7. We need it to we hit it a little bit.
The expectation was, I think at the time, they were saving Hogan Warrior 2 for the next year. I think had it not been for the Gulf War, you would have had that. You would have had the Warrior carry it into it and drop it back to Hogan.
Well, you would have had if the Gulf War doesn't happen, the Sergeant Slaughter character sure doesn't work, does it?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I don't know what they would have done. The Warrior, it's interesting because here's the other thing about Warrior. After the Rude program, he was in limbo. Like, the Randy Savage thing, I don't remember that being that hot. It heated up, obviously, the night of the Rumble, the Royal Rumble 91, where he drops the title to Sergeant Slaughter.
He attacked him during Saturday night's main event when he was defending against DiBiase.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, but that was, like, November. Like, and remember the Survivor Series? He was in a match where he wasn't really in a program. It was him, Tornado, and the LOD against Perfect and the 3 Demolition guys.
Right.
Tornado's view, he wasn't even like... The opposing captain wasn't a guy he was even in a program with.
Right.
They did him not... Look,
I agree.
He's not the guy, but they did him... The promotion did the Ultimate Warrior no favors. I would tell them that. Now, I've always maintained it, and... Ultimately, look, 1990 was a dismal year. We should you go after WrestleMania 6. It was bad. I'm trying to think of the thing. Like, SummerSlam, obviously the big draw. I mean, they did the... And again, double main event. Does the Warrior no favors. Warrior, Rude, Hogan, Earthquake. Hogan still, in the... And Hogan... And that was the match that had the most heat, the Hogan Earthquake, not Warrior, Rude. And they had to put it in a cage to build intrigue. Following that, Warrior didn't even really do anything. The Hogan Earthquake thing kind of just continued. I'm trying to think of the other...
Well, here's the funny thing.
Like, there just was nothing going on in 1990. It was so boring, and the big thing, obviously, was Slaughter, which is much maligned through the years. It is tasteless.
Yeah.
And, I've not defended, but, said some of the criticism was a little overblown, with things like Eddie Guerrero that the company did. It was pretty. Although, here's what. See, you're a nice xenophobe, okay?
Yeah.
You're a xenophobe Republican, okay?
Yes.
What was different between Sergeant Slaughter and the Iron Sheik? Except that times had changed. We were more politically correct in 91 than 84.
It wasn't a shooting war with our troops in harm's way. And a guy openly portraying...
The hostages? I mean, I know that was... I know
hostages were years before.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. I mean, it kind of cooled. But
yes,
we were at odds with Iran.
The tenor of the times.
I mean, you're right.
It's all about the tenor of the times.
They didn't trot Iron Sheik out, you know, right after Reagan's inauguration saying, hey, Ron, you want a piece of me now?
Right.
You know, but...
Right. It was when they hit on it, and a guy portraying a traitor character. I was in the American military, and now I've gone over to the Iraqi side. I mean,
I always thought, you know what's kind of funny?
Has there ever been anything more over the top than that?
It's almost comical how stupid it is. Like, to me, like, it isn't offensive. It's just like, come on.
If you think it's, like, so campy that it's stupid and you're laughing at it, then I kind of get that.
Well, that's kind of why I thought that this match just isn't fun. Like, to me, that's why the reason I don't fondly remember the Slaughter Hogan World Title Program is not because I was offended. It's more campy than anything.
Yeah, and neither one of those guys was going to be able to carry the other one.
Yeah, and by the way, you talk about great heat for a match. That Warrior Slaughter match at Royal Rumble?
It was.
Do yourself a favor, kids. Oh. Watch that. I mean, look, okay, again. You know,
the war had just started a couple days before, so it was molten
heat. I remember when the Warrior, they do a spot, General Adnan, which that was kind of tasteless, General Adnan.
Yeah.
Okay, they do it. They have the Iraqi flag, and the Warrior breaks through the stick and smashes.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have thought, good God, was this crowd going crazy. And they do the title change to officially kill the Warrior. They had made the decision by that point. We need to talk about the venue, obviously, a lot.
Right.
WrestleMania 7. But Savage cost him the title, because remember, Warrior before would not get, he's like, you know, he wouldn't give Savage a title match, he said.
Right.
So Savage comes and interferes, hits him with the scepter, and that's how it is. And it was shocking at the time that they put the belt on Slaughter. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming.
Right. It truly was. And I want to back up and I want to talk macro for a little bit here. Because, again, that match, that was the night that it was made official that it wasn't going to be Hogan Warrior 2 at WrestleMania 7. I mean, clearly they were going in that direction with Slaughter, but like you said, when they pulled the trigger on it, the shock of it all.
But it all kind of fell into place, though, at the Rumble, because, it's funny, I've always, criticized, the formula Hogan win, oh, cool, yeah. Gee, wow, how interesting, Hogan wins again. He had to win the Rumble that night.
Right.
And from there, though, the problem was, even if you go back a couple years, Hogan Savage, you know, even in hindsight, even at the time, you're like, Savage was so hot. You're like, okay, yeah, Hogan will probably win because that's what Hogan does. But there was no – I mean, I was a little older, too, and kind of getting a little hipper to the way that this industry works. I mean, there was – you talk of the first seven WrestleManias. You know, we talk about Hogan Bundy was kind of a real dog early on. I think this one even has that beat in terms of lack of intrigue. They hyped this up as the Stars and Stripes WrestleMania. Now – while WrestleMania 6 is finally remembered for the venue, this one gets docked for the venue.
Right.
Because it was supposed to be at the L.A. Memorial Coliseum, which, in case you're younger and don't know what that is, that was built for the 84 Olympics, correct?
No, for the 32 Olympics. It's an ancient facility. Okay. It was re-upgraded and renovated.
Pardon my French.
Renovated,
goodness. Because when I said that, I was like, God, that building, you know, I was thinking about that before this.
Yeah,
I was
it's
like,
ancient.
God, that was built in 84. How bad did that thing get in seven
years? No, yeah, it was renovated.
The Raiders played there when they were in L.A. That's where the Raiders played, kids.
Yeah.
And they had these big dreams. We're going to have 100,000 people there. We're going to set this record. It's going to be great. And the advance was slow because wrestling was not as hot at that point. And they made the decision to move it to the much smaller LA Sports Arena, which is where the Clippers played before they started becoming tenants in the Lakers building. This was a Clippers-only building. And the theme is, oh, wow, that's fail. And, of course, the company line was, we got bomb threats over the Slaughter angle. Stop
We had to do it. For security purposes, hey, Patterson, phone in a bomb threat.
Yeah, exactly. That's terrible, okay? Just be honest, okay? The advance was slow.
Right.
I want to tell you something right now. This goes with my macro theme of WrestleMania 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this indoor venue, and granted, you know, I kind of agree with something John Cena said. I think maybe he and I draw the ire of Vince McMahon when we say it. I still like the arena feel for WrestleMania. It makes for a super hot – this was a hot crowd for early 90s WWE at WrestleMania 7. This was a hot crowd that I thought made this show a little bit more like WrestleMania 6, they just seemed kind of dead the whole time. There was a lot of no, I mean, the wave, really.
Right.
There was no wave. I mean, this crowd was hot.
A real poop hole arena, though. I mean, LA Sports
Oh, it was a dog. I mean, you figure maybe they couldn't have got the. I mean, I don't know if the Forum was booked, you know, which is where the Lakers, but you're right. It was it was a real dog arena. Now, it's where they had WrestleMania 2, though, right? Isn't what that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so,
right, that was
so
the.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe the Forum didn't do. I don't know. I don't have. Maybe, okay. Maybe I'll call Jack Nicholson during a timeout
there you
and
go.
See what happened. But I think this WrestleMania. If you, it's interesting because it goes against a lot of what we said. If you take away the tastelessness of the main event, the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? The obviousness of the result.
Yeah.
There's a word there that I'm missing. This show is better than WrestleMania 6, I believe.
Interesting. Well, we'll get
and
to
most
that.
That is not the mainstream view, I think.
No, it's certainly not. Well, last macro thing I want to hit before this, because this is something that had occurred to me, because we were at this point squarely into, and this is part of, by the way, the historical rap that is on The Ultimate Warrior, because I agree with you that he was done no favors in the booking. Nevertheless, the Ultimate Warrior's professional epitaph reads in large part that he presided over the beginning of the end of the boom. It is commonly regarded that in 1990, that's when you really started to see the first significant weakening.
And a lot of that's
since
tied to
the
him.
National
You're right.
Expansion.
A lot of that's tied to him.
Unfairly in many cases.
It
but
was now
scoreboard.
It wasn't as bad as it would get. I mean, the drop started getting more severe.
Yeah,
after.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
I mean, I remember. You know, I always go back to how much was wrestling talked about in school. That's something I'm going to bring up the next couple of WrestleManias. There were a lot of people were talking about this show going up. I remember I was in fifth grade, and a lot of people were still looking forward to WrestleMania at this point. While certainly, you know, this boom period had peaked, there was still a lot of intrigue despite that,
but
despite some of the negatives going on.
Here's what
show.
I want to compare that to, though, because I just realized this recently. I've always thought of this in terms of the end of the last boom. All the hotshot signings that Vince made to try to pop things, whether it be... Remember, he wouldn't bring in anybody when it counted during the invasion, but then subsequently.
Yeah.
Flair, NWO, Big Papa Pump, etc.
Yeah.
It's very
Goldberg.
Interesting. Yeah, Goldberg. In retrospect, I don't know if we could tie Dusty to this, but certainly as you start going along, Ric Flair later on would be one of the things. But what I want to talk about going into this one here, let us not forget how significant it was that he finally signed the Road Warriors, immediately christened them the Legion of Doom. But that was something there. That was an attempt to really kind of pop things a little bit. Outside of Ric Flair, easily the biggest thing that had not been under his banner yet.
Well, I wanna...
And then it was.
Here's a weird discussion. I think when I wrote for the blog last year, I talked about this.
Yeah.
And maybe this is a unique place. Because, I mean, Hogan's Slaughter, look, it's like every Hogan match you ever saw. There's not a lot to talk about there. It's the reason this WrestleMania gets a bad rap. But here's an interesting talking point.
Mm-hmm.
The tag team division. I'm glad you brought up the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
The tag team division was an interesting spot here. Because the Road Warriors, they are the one team that can be over without the belts.
Right.
That's always been their thing. You know, people are like, why weren't the Road Warriors the champions? Well, they could be over without it. And they were over. You know, they came in for the quote unquote dream feud with Demolition.
Right.
That was never really blown off on TV. It just they had the three demolitions.
The six man on Saturday
night.
Yeah,
the Warrior
event.
Was involved. It wasn't what it could have been.
No.
Like many things in 1990. But they were still over.
Although the right team went over. Vince,
and
for once, put aside his ego. And his version of the Road Warriors didn't defeat
although,
the real
although
article.
Although he didn't squash them on TV, though, really. Maybe out of deference
True,
to that.
True. But they beat him around the horn significantly, yeah.
But I want to talk about the tag team division here real quick. Because this was kind of the last WrestleMania where there was depth there.
Right.
And it was a weird spot. The Hearts... You know, we talked about it was kind of the last hurrah for Demolition at WrestleMania 6. They turn heel. They bring in Crush, the evil third member, and they just sort of turned heel. I remember they jumped the Hearts, and they're like, oh, that's dirty. You know, that's whatever. They dropped the belts to the Hearts. The Hearts were really over.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good match, 2 out of 3 falls, SummerSlam 90, when they win the titles. But the LOD gets involved. They were relatively new. The plan was not for the Hearts to hold onto the belts for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, they were supposed to drop them to the Rockers. And they, in fact, did on a Saturday Night's Main Event. That's the match where the rope breaks.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about this on the new Sean Brett DVD, obviously. And it was called the Phantom title switch back in the day in the pre-internet era, where it's just like the match was bad. They were going to fire Neidhart. Then they kind of decided they weren't going to fire Neidhart. So they just pretended the match never happened and the Harts kept the titles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the booking plans were. I mean, I wasn't there, obviously, but I had heard rumors that Power and Glory was then supposed to get them from the Rockers. If you remember, at SummerSlam, Power and Glory crushed the Rockers. Now, Michaels was injured, and they didn't remember that. But, I mean, they were put over huge on that show.
Yeah.
And I don't know if then they were going to job at CLOD, what the thing was. But there were a lot of interesting things that people don't remember from this period. The Nasty Boys, who are the ones who wind up getting the belts. The Harts wind up holding the belt the entire time to this show, and they drop them to the Nasty Boys. The Nasty Boys were a rather random signing. A lot of people don't know about this. The Nasty Boys had a great match at Halloween Havoc 90 against the Steiners. It's a forgotten classic.
Right.
Watch this one tonight, Ricky.
Okay.
It's a great match. The Nasty Boys were real red hot. And Vince being Vince, I think on a whim, because they were available, WCW being WCW, didn't have their contracts done. Vince just signed them away because they were a hot act. And I think, you know, people have talked, I've read in some places, that to justify that signing, Vince kind of had to put the titles on the Nasty Boys.
Well, and he probably smelled money in an eventual Nasty Boys Road Warriors feud.
Which is where they went eventually. Going into SummerSlam. But, you know, the Road Warriors here, they just they squashed the aforementioned Power and Glory.
Yeah. Who Paul Roma and Hercules a year before he would become PWI rookie.
I'm telling you, you watched SummerSlam 90, you watched them squash the Rockers. The Powerplex was a great move.
That was. That was a great move. Yeah. I couldn't believe nobody thought of it at the time.
Yeah. And
before then.
You can't tell me that you didn't think that this team was going to be in line for something after you watched that show. I thought they should have beat the Harts, to be honest, because the baby rather than the way. And then, because here's the thing. Power. So, anyway, after that long soliloquy, here's kind of the story.
Okay.
Jim Neidhart keeps his job for a while. The Road Warriors stay over but don't get the belts.
Mm-hmm.
The Nasty Boys are randomly signed, and they get the belts from the Harts at this show. It's pretty good. By the way, it's a good match, I think. Like a 3-star match. The Nasties beating the Harts. The crowd was shocked at the time. No one expected the Nasties to go over here.
Right.
Even though the Harts were kind of stale. And
the helmet was involved.
Yeah, the helmet. And it was, you know, it was long overdue to give Brett that singles push finally, which he does. You know, they break it. This is it for the Harts.
Right.
The Rockers were clearly the best team in the company at this time period, and yet they just never get the belts.
Didn't get the belts. On this show, they beat the Barbarian and Haku.
In the Curtain Jerker. Another kind of 3-star-ish match.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. The Rockers, I'm telling you, they were so good. They had kind of cleaned up. This was a year before the big turn where Michaels turns on Jannetty.
Yeah.
And after this, they were kind of caught in limbo, the Rockers.
Right.
Because the LOD were clearly getting the titles. They just annihilate Power and Glory in a minute on this show.
Right.
Like, in one of many throwaways on this show. But they get Rockers win here. They're the best team. They just kind of go into limbo because the breakup angle, they didn't even start teasing that till months down the road.
Right. I mean, very possibly, as far as workers go, one of the five top, you could say one of the five top tag teams in company history, quite possibly, and they never got the belts at any point in time. Somebody who was in another one of the elite ones in company history, the British Bulldog, now a solo guy, defeating the Warlord. That must have been a truly putrid match because Davey Boy Smith was into his heavy roids period. And
yeah, he was brought back here as a solo guy, you know, which led to the hard feelings between him and Dynamite.
Right.
There was a bit of an angle between this. You know, this match is actually not putrid.
Okay.
Whereas WrestleMania 6, a lot of things were disappointing. There were some things on this show that were surprisingly okay or good. You know, like Harts Nasties, okay? That's not a match that you expect to be a match of the year, nor was it, but it was pretty good. Same with Rockers Haku Barbarian. This was okay. The Warlord, the whole draw to this was like he had this full Nelson that was so good, and he was going to put the Bulldog in it.
Okay.
And the Bulldog breaks out of it and wins. It's your standard from the era roided up versus roided up face versus roided up heel guy. It doesn't stink. I'll be honest with you. It's far from the best. It's far from the worst. It's far from the best match, but it's also far from the worst match on this show.